All right, I think we're ready.
All right.
Everything should be going. Get yourself comfy. Get the microphone a little bit closer. There you go. That'll work. All right, I'll start making it official. Welcome to the Golden Strip Soundcast, the official soundcast of the Golden Strip School of Music. Today, I'm excited because we have the newest family member here at the Golden Strip School of Music, a brand new teacher, and he's going to introduce himself and tell us all about himself.
Hi, I'm Christopher Blunt. I am the new trumpet teacher here. I go to currently Limestone University. I'm going towards a music education degree. I'm a junior there. And so that's kind of my thing. I've been playing trumpet since sixth grade, but I also play a little bit of piano and I play all brass instruments and a little bit of clarinet and bassoon.
And bassoon?
Yeah. Those aren't like very skilled, but if need be, I can play those.
Really? Could you, if need be, would you be able to teach them? Beginner.
Somewhat clarinet is something that I feel more confident in.
Right.
But bassoon is something that's just, there's so many factors that go into it that it's a much harder thing to teach.
Right. So, have you ever played oboe?
I've blown on an oboe one time and I was able to make a sound out of it, but.
But that's it.
It was very painful, and I just put it away right after.
Really? Painful?
Yeah, it was because the way you have to do it is you tuck your lips in, and you have to – it's a really small reed, and it's a double-reeded instrument. And so you have to have a lot of pressure in the part where the reed comes in to make a sound. And so having that type of pressure for a long time can be painful if you're not used to it.
Yeah,
so,
I could imagine.
Yeah.
You're a junior.
Yes.
So what are the after college plans? Work for the public school system?
Yes, private? I plan to teach high school band. That's nice. Something that I'm very passionate about. So it's something I want to teach, and eventually I want to get further education and eventually teach college.
Oh, that's awesome. Mm-hmm. You're gonna be a professor. Mm-hmm. Professor Blunt. Nice. Very cool. What is your current approach to teaching?
My approach to teaching is, first and foremost, building trust and a relationship with the student. It can be individual or with a whole class, but either way, building a relationship with that student, building trust, because if they see that you care about them and that you're invested in them, then that will make them feel, well, that will make them want to invest in you, in a sense. And so you have that, investment between teacher and student going on, then that makes much more synergy and you get a lot more done and you have a lot more fun. And so that's my first and most important approach to teaching.
And I like that you added the word fun there, because we like to make sure that everybody here has some form of fun.
Yeah.
As you can tell by the way I dress, I'm very casual.
There's nothing wrong with that.
This time of year it's t-shirts and shorts.
Yeah.
And my very bright white legs that just never seem to tan. Okay, what's your favorite thing about teaching?
My favorite thing about teaching is just to see the reaction of the student, how much fun they have, how much it changes their lives. Because a lot of students, music is their release from the stuff they have going on in their life. I know that's how it was for me, nothing severe, but it just, whenever I was dealing with issues and stuff, when I came to play music, I didn't have to think about that stuff. And I got to enjoy music and it got to be relaxation. And so seeing that through students and seeing them grow as musicians and enjoy that, and the fact that they can see that in themselves as well, it's just a joy to see.
That, I like that. I had a parent come in today because they wanted to take a tour of the school. And he said something I thought was great, that when you're learning music, you gain wisdom. And I had never thought of it like that. And that was very cool.
Yeah.
We all have inspirations. Drummers could be John Bonham, Neil Peart. Guitar players, it could be Randy Rhoads. It could be Stevie Ray Vaughan. What was your inspiration for trumpet?
So my first and foremost inspiration was my Uncle Vernon. Back when I was in, he died when I was in elementary school, but I didn't know he played trumpet till when I first started playing trumpet myself. And my mom would tell me stories about how he was one of the best trumpet players ever, and how he got a solo as a freshman in college, and how he was just an excellent trumpet player, and he was one of the only people in my family to take music as a career and go fully into that career, because I have a family of musicians. But my dad, he's a singer, and my mom's a singer as well, and they both sing on the praise team at my church.
Oh, okay.
But they have completely separate jobs from that. But my Uncle Vernon did fully music, so that really inspired me to follow in his footsteps in a way.
Right. I have to say, you mentioned the marching band. My son was in marching band, and I am just amazed the way that the music directors, you guys get the kids to move in unison and play. I'd be tripping over myself because I'm a spaz, so I have to give you, I feel like a kid when I say mad props, but, you know, it's awesome that you can take kids and get them to do that.
Yeah, it's a true art, marching band. Some people outside of it like to oversimplify it and say that you're just walking and playing, but there's so much more to it. You have to learn to play in certain times with quality. You have to learn formations. You have to learn to move to different spots. And a lot of that is training muscle memory, just learning, going from certain spots over and over again to the point where if you had your eyes closed, you could do it. And so in that sense, it's a lot of muscle memory that goes on, but learning that, the process of getting that muscle memory learned, is very difficult. And so I feel like that's one of the reasons why kids who do marching band, you know, that saying of wisdom, how people who do music have more wisdom, the same sense is with marching band, because you have to learn to multitask and learn to have those things and muscle memory.
Right. And like I said, it's amazing. I think I told one of the other teachers, I absolutely loved going to the marching band competitions. I found it more fun than going to the football games.
Yeah.
it was so cool to see what these kids could come up with. You know, my son was in one, I guess it was a, they speak 1A, I think, the really small schools, because there were times they had like 10 kids in their marching band, and that was it. And they would still come up with something great.
Yeah.
So I think it's one of the best things a kid can do is to be a marching band. My daughter refused to do it. She's like, I'm not doing that.
Yeah, I don't blame her.
Because she knows at her school, she goes to Hillcrest High.
Yeah.
And she knows that when you practice there, you practice in a parking lot.
Yeah.
And it's a million degrees out already, plus the pavement. I don't know how those kids do it.
Yes, the parking lot. I had to do that for 2 years myself in marching band.
Did you?
They finally got a practice field, but it was right beside the football players. So for a good hour or so of practice, we had to hear the football practice right beside us.
Oh, coaches yelling, screaming,
yeah.
Crunching noise when people hit each other. So now we all deal, when we're learning to play, and even when we're established, we all get frustrated. So how do you help your students deal with that frustration? Especially brand new kids.
So the way I would do it, or I do it, is kind of taking a step back from what we're doing, because there's a saying that if you keep hitting your head against the brick wall, you know, nothing's not going to break. And so kind of like in the same sense, if you kind of hit a stump and you can't get past it, take a step back, and we kind of evaluate what's going on. And if it's something that's just way above the student's level, then we just take it down, we dial it down, try something a little easier and try and build up more towards that level. And in another sense, we just step back and have a sense of reality and the fact that we're all human. We all have issues, we all have stuff that we have to overcome. We're not perfect. And so kind of learning to have patience with ourselves. And so in the perspective of the student, kind of telling them that you need to be patient with yourself. Keep working at it. We're taking a break right now, but when you go back, keep working at it and don't let the fact that you can't get it frustrate you, because the more you work at it, the more you're going to improve. And before you know it, you're going to get there.
You're going to get that piece. Yes, that is very true.
Yeah.
And I like your approach to it, just taking that step back and not trying to force.
Yeah.
Because you do see that happen sometimes, whether it's a teacher or a parent, especially parents, they force a kid.
Yeah.
They're like, but listen, man, I'm paying all this money for these lessons. You should be able to do that.
Yeah.
The kid's human. Okay, practice. What's your recommendation as far as practice for your students?
Practice, if you can help it, you should at the very least play your instrument every single day. It doesn't have to be you have to play 2 hours every single day of trumpet, hard, intense practice. No, because we all, like I said, we're all human. We all have lives. And so, but the important thing is trying to play your trumpet every single day, because the thing about trumpet is it's a very harsh instrument when it comes to stepping away from it. So I know in my experience, if I haven't practiced or played in 2 days, then the next day that I put my horn on my face, you know, I sound terrible. And it's just really hard. I have to spend maybe an hour of my practice time trying to get back to the level that I was because I took those 2 days off. So in terms of practice, try and play every single day. If you can practice consistently for maybe an hour, then that's great. But if you can't, that's also okay, because like an old trumpet teacher of mine said, 30 minutes of practice is way better than 0 hours of practice. 5 minutes of practice is way better than zero time of practice. So just getting the horn on your face every day is the first and foremost thing that you should focus on, and then practice as much time as you can and as you can mentally handle, because mental health is important too.
I know nothing about the brass instruments. I know nothing about the trumpet, except for growing up, I thought it was the cool kid instrument because it was just so awesome. Probably because I was exposed to like Wynton Marsalis and guys like that.
Yeah.
What's the first lesson like for somebody that's never played before? They come in. What's it like?
The first lesson is getting an actual sound on the instrument and what that is like. The first time I picked up the trumpet, I remember my parents told me, when you get the trumpet, don't play it at all. Don't play it until your first day of band class. But I didn't listen. And when I was home alone, I pulled out the instrument and I just started making noises out of it the best I can to try and figure it out. So with the first lesson, it's really just figuring out how you can make a sound, because everybody is different. And there's a fundamental way that you can approach it. Everybody can. But it's just figuring out the best way that you can make a sound, and then just building on top of that from there.
So are there, like, vocalists have certain exercises they do before they sing? Are there certain ones you guys have to do before you play?
Yes, every instrumentalist has to warm up before you play. It is super important. You don't want to start a performance cold, because then you'll sound bad until you're fully warmed up. And even then, your embouchure isn't properly prepared. And so trumpets, we have certain exercises that we like to do, like maybe Clark or Irons exercises, things like that. They're just common exercises that we like to do. And then long tones as well. Those are super important, and not just for trumpet, but for a lot of wind instruments. Long tones are essential, and they are a great warm up for everybody to use. And so doing those is extremely helpful.
So I have no idea what long tones are, so enlighten me.
So long tones are kind of like exercises, in a sense, where you have a note that you start off on, and it can be, there are all types of different long tones. So let's say, for example, you do a long tone where you go up in thirds, so you have one note, and then you go three notes up above that note, just straight to that third note above, and then you go up another third, and you keep going up. And then you go back down, and you could have different dynamics with that, soft or loud, that type of thing. And that's basically what long tones are, in a sense. They're kind of hard to describe if you don't use it by name. But, you know, there are all types of long tones out there for winds to use.
Another question I have, you have to forgive my stupidity and my dumb questions, but like I said, I have no experience with it. When you're blowing the trumpet or whatever it is you do, are you making the noise? Are you like into it and then just changing the notes by pressing the valves, or how does it work?
Okay, that's not a stupid question. So it starts from your face and from the air inside your body.
And don't be afraid to make weird noises here. We're just having fun.
And so you start with your air, and you blow your air through your mouth, and then you make a buzz. And so people kind of get confused with how that buzz works, because you start a lot of students off and you say, okay, make a hoarse noise where you go
right
with your mouth and you make that buzzing noise. And so people think, okay, you just with your mouth, and you put that against the trumpet and a sound should come out, right?
Right.
But a lot of times it doesn't. And the reason for that is because that's not all you do, but you use the air, like I mentioned before, to push that buzz that you make. And so a good way to kind of clear that confusion is you make the horse noise, and then you blow your air, and then you try and combine those two. In a sense,
yeah. It's just my bottom lip flapping around.
In a sense, try and blow that buzz. Try and push that buzz from your mouth as much as you can. And when you push your face to that instrument, try and imagine that you're pushing that buzz all the way through the instrument, and you're pushing that air all the way through that instrument. And when you do that, you'll get a sound. And it can get much more complicated with how things work. But in a sense, when you put that noise through the instrument, you make that sound, the trumpet is vibrating and making that noise.
Right.
And then with the different valves, that changes the tubing of the instrument, and it changes the length, in a sense, of the instrument. And that's what creates different pitches.
Oh, okay.
So, and with the different slides in the instrument as well, it makes it longer or shorter. And so you use that to change the tuning of the instrument as well.
I don't think I realized a trumpet had slides.
Yeah.
Really?
And so it has different slides that we use to tune, and there are certain notes on the trumpet that are commonly out of tune, like a trumpet D is usually very sharp, and so you have to pull out third valve slide for that.
Okay.
So, and of course, I could be, I always get my different valve slides mixed up, so I could be completely wrong on which one I just named, but but you pull out a slide with your ring finger. And
right. You see, now it's muscle memory for you. So,
yeah.
So your
yeah.
brain has been disconnected from that
exactly.
move where
exactly.
you're just playing and it's ring finger, pinky finger, whatever finger's in there. You know that's the one to move.
Right.
To make that the right sound. I get it. Now for the question I ask everybody, who's the most famous or well-known person that you've ever met, dealt with, played with?
So I actually was a part of the Teacher Cadets program in high school my senior year. And I also got to be a part of the EDGY-111 class that was connected only for seniors. And so my teacher took that class with her to go see a famous educator known as Ron Clark. And so there's actually a movie about him and everything. Long story short, he was this teacher who went to a very low-income school with kind of like an inner city type vibe classroom. And, you know, the teachers in that school, they kind of said, with these students, you're not going to be able to connect with them. You're not going to be able to cooperate with them. You got to treat them like dogs because that's how they act. And, you know, that's the only way you're going to get through to them.
Right.
But this teacher, Ron Clark, he refused to believe that. And so he had his own, people saw as kind of like outlandish methods of teaching to kind of engage his students, things as much as jumping on top of the desk and, you know, making loud noises and dances and a bunch of really crazy and weird things that most teachers, you know, would kind of see as disruptive. But he used that to be engaging with his students and to be right. fun. And his students ended up having some of the highest scores in the state, I believe. And so because of that,
wow,
it was such a different approach and something that, you know, teachers at the time looked down upon, but it's something that he took advantage of, and he took, you know, a chance on those teachers. And that's one of the things that, you know, I use the phrase invest in from, because he invested in his students when, you know, the other teachers in that school kind of felt like that those students weren't, they couldn't be invested in, but
right.
he chose to invest in those students. And so it was a great honor to get to meet him. He led a convention where he kind of talked about teaching, kind of talked about some of the things that educators can do, kind of taught us in a sense. And so we all got to sit there and listen to him speak. Everybody got to ask questions. And then I got to take a picture with him as well at the end.
Oh, that's nice.
So, and he's also wrote several books as well.
So he's inspired generations of teachers.
Yes.
Yes. I'm assuming he was back in... He started that like in the 80s?
I think it was, I'm not sure, maybe like late 90s.
Oh, late 90s.
Early 2000s. So he's like,
really?
He's not like a super late teacher. He was, the last time when he was at that convention, I think he was in his late 30s, maybe. So he wasn't not a very super old teacher at all.
Okay. So yeah. For some reason I thought he was like a, you know, an 80s kind of guy, because I would have thought by the late 90s, early 2000s, teachers, even in the inner city schools, were a little more principled, a little more invested in their students, but I guess not. Yeah. if his ways opened their eyes somehow, then that's awesome.
You'd be surprised how many teachers have to kind of get faced with that challenge and don't know what to do. I feel like with those teachers, I don't want to put a negative, you know, vibe on those teachers and kind of say that they just gave up on the students because they're horrible people. You know, they're people faced with real challenges.
Right.
And, you know, they just didn't know what to do with those students. And I feel like that a lot of teachers, they, in a sense, they rightfully so get frustrated with the job that they have, with the stuff that they have to deal with.
Oh, sure.
Especially in COVID season. And so, you know, with that, I can understand why a lot of teachers would, you know, give up or, you know, not be able to do it anymore. Not everybody can handle the teaching job. Something I always say is that if you're not passionate about teaching, if you're not fully passionate about teaching, do not do it. Don't, because it's not high pay. It's not a high paying salary.
Right.
And it's a very difficult job, and it's a very vital job.
It's very, unfortunately, it's a very thankless job.
Yeah.
And I'm from the school of, we've treated teaching wrong the entire time in this country, where they should be held up like a doctor or lawyer and paid like a doctor or lawyer, because they're shaping our brains as we go through life. And certain teachers in our life, you always remember their name. Me, it's Mr. Bedford. I will never forget the guy. He straightened me out. I was running down the wrong way, and he straightened me out. He happened to be a retired Massachusetts state policeman, and he was teaching at my little private school in New York. But I get a lot of exposure to the, I guess you'd want to call it, the inner city schools, because I do a lot of work with Carolina High. My son went there for their magnet program, and which was a great experience for him, because he got to see that not everybody gets to live the way he lives. I announce for football games and the baseball games. And so I see that the investment in those teachers there is incredible.
Yeah.
They go out of their way with these kids. If a kid suddenly isn't showing up for school, a couple of teachers and administrator will go find them, go get them, bring them to school, find out what they can do to help them, to keep them there. Because like you said, they are dealing with challenges that we just don't know about.
It just takes that much investment in those students.
It does. Mr. Delaney's the principal there, and that school has turned around since he's been there.
Yeah.
Big change. Big change.
Yeah. The biggest thing that a lot of people don't realize is that most parents who have a 9-to-5 job, typical one, when they send their kids to school, a lot of people don't realize that the kids see the teachers more than they see their parents.
Oh, absolutely.
And that doesn't even count students who are athletes, students who have extracurricular activities that, you know, have them stay up over the evening. And so, you know, teachers see students more than parents see their own children, which is a crazy realization. And that just puts in perspective how much more important teachers are.
Absolutely. That's one thing I've never minded. Whenever a budget came up where they said, well, it's going to increase homeowner taxes because of education, I'm like, I don't care.
Yeah.
Raise it for that. Lower it for something else that I don't need. Yeah. But for education, raise it. Pay those teachers what they're worth. Okay, now, what is one thing that you would like every parent of your students to know? Like, what's the one thing?
One thing that I would want everybody to know is I want them to know that I'm invested in their child, not just as a musician, but as a person. Because at the end of the day, my goal isn't just for them to become a great musician, but it's for them to have, you know, a great life gain out of that. Because at the end of the day, I care way more about a student's mental health than about the subject. Now, I do care about the subject a lot, and that is the focus, but I do want them to have mental benefits out of that. And so I don't want parents to think of me as just a teacher who's just trying to, you know, get a paycheck.
Right.
And he's just trying to get the student along and just wants them to be the most professional and amazing player. And that's the only thing I care about. No, I care about students. And that's one of the reasons why in the first lessons, my intention is, you know, to ask the student what their intention is. What do they want out of this?
Right.
What is their goal? Where do they want to go? And if they don't know, then that's fine. You know, kind of show them the opportunities that life has for them. kind of show them the different paths they can take. But at the end of the day, I care about the students and their lives and that they are doing okay.
I got to say, I can tell you're going to be an awesome teacher. I can see the passion on your face when you're talking about it. I wish we were on camera right now so they could see it. I could see it in your eyes. And I hope you stick around here a long time so that we can watch your development, because it's going to be great. You're going places.
Thank you.
I appreciate you coming in. I really appreciate you being part of our Golden Strip School of Music family.
Thank you for having me.
And I guess that's it. We're done.
All right.
See how easy that was?
Wasn't so bad, was it?